Welcome everyone to today's internet seminar, which will cover the 2011 CARE National webinar, which has been sponsored by the EPA CARE National program. My name is Jean Dallas, and I'm coming here from the EPA Superfund program, where I'll be helping to moderate today's session. We will officially begin the formal presentation in just a few minutes, and we're going to let a few latecomers have a couple extra minutes to hop on the line and join us. But while we're waiting for them, I'm going to cover a couple of basic housekeeping items and instructions. As I mentioned earlier, when you registered today, you would have been provided with a URL, which was a unique URL or seminar homepage, where you could read a complete description of today's session, take a look at our instructors, their contact information, my contact information. You also have the opportunity to either go to the slides online by clicking the Go to Seminar button or following one of the download links that you would have seen at the bottom of that seminar homepage or would have been emailed to you. So you want to be sure to have a copy of the slides open and available in one of those formats. For those of you who are joining us on the phone lines, I mentioned that you want to be sure to keep your phone on mute for the entire session. We will be taking questions after the official presentation is over, and we'll provide instructions on how to take yourself off of mute. But until then, please use your own mute button to mute your line to make sure that it's on mute, or simply hit *6 right now to mute your lines. Don't put the call on hold. Sometimes I can bring background music or commercials that will be disruptive. So please just simply hit *6 right now to mute your phone lines. I'm going to ask everyone if you could move on past the title slide, or slide number one, onto slide number two. As you should have figured out by now, with Clue and Internet seminars, each individual participant is responsible to manually move through materials at verbal cues. So this is very similar to a conference call. Regardless of the forum or how you're looking at the materials or how you're listening to us, you'll have to individually move through or turn the page when we indicate to do so. If you have the slides open electronically in front of you or printed out, simply turn the page or click to move on to the next slide. If you're looking at them through a web browser window, you'll see numbered links that appear on the left side. You can click on those links to navigate to the next appropriate slide. Or you can use the buttons that appear along the top. There's a series of orange circles with various icons that will help you move through the materials. The single arrow pointing to the right will move you forward one slide. Single arrow pointing to the left will move you backwards one slide. Another important button up there is a question mark icon. Again, and this is just a reminder, please place your phone on mute. I can hear a side conversation or saying hello to your friends. So please hit *6 to mute your lines. Patrice, what I'm going to recommend if you could do for me, since it's just you two in the room there, if you could use the global mute command right now.
Okay.
And hit *5.
The leader has muted your line.
Catrice, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, excellent. Yeah, I can hear you just fine. Thank you. So thanks to that one caller, we have now globally muted all the phone lines. I'll provide instructions when we get to the question and answer period for those of you on the phones, how you can take yourself off of mute and go ahead and ask the questions verbally. But until then, we do ask again for you to keep yourselves muted and to try to minimize disruption. Those of you who are streaming the audio and don't have a chance to ask a question by phone, you can use that question mark button that I alluded to earlier. If you click on that, a new window will open up and allow you to type up a comment or question. Again, we're going to go through all of the PowerPoint materials first and then handle the questions. So you can start typing up your comments and questions at any point in time. You don't have to wait until the end to submit them. We just won't start answering them until we've gone through all of the PowerPoint materials today. And you can submit them again either by typing them up electronically, and at the appropriate time I'll read them out loud on your behalf, or if you're purely participating by phone, you want to ask the questions out loud, we'll provide instructions on how to unmute yourself and ask your questions directly. The final reminder that I have for everybody is that this session is being recorded, and it will be available in approximately 1 to 2 weeks. So if you think that this was a useful session, you'll automatically receive an email once that recording is available, and you'll be able to refer coworkers or other interested parties over to the Clue website where they can download or replay the session for free. So as I mentioned, we will indicate we're moving on to the next slide. So at this point, I'm going to ask everybody to move to the very next slide, which is slide number 3. And with the end of my reminders, I'm going to turn things over to Marva on the title slide, slide number 3.
Great. You're turning it over now, Jean?
Yep, it's all yours on slide three.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you so much, Jean, for your facilitation. It's really professional. We really appreciate it. Hello, everybody. My name is Marva King, and I'm the CARE co-chair. And we're here for the third and last national webcast on the 2011 CARE RFP. So, again, I'm sure these webcasts are archived. You can go to our and Jean will tell you about this later, I'm sure, as well. But you can go to our CARE website and click on a link and get any of the archives of these webcasts we've had. This is the third and last one. And what we basically do is go through a short presentation, because the purpose of these webcasts is to hear from you and to receive your questions and respond to your questions. So that's the main purpose. This is a quick overview of what the CARE program is. Everything in this overview is in your RFP, and you'll find out that most of the questions you ask are already in the National Question and Answer document. So those are your two documents you really need to pay attention to, the CARE RFP and the National and the Questions and Answers document. And so that's all on our website as well. So let's get started with the presentation. And the next slide, if you go to that next slide, it talks about what is CARE. And for those of you who do not know, CARE is a community-based, community-driven program. And what we do with this program is help you build partnerships and help your own communities understand and reduce your risk from all different sources. So the main thing you have to remember is that CARE is community-driven, it's community-based, and you look at all sources of environmental risk. So you do not just look at one source, you look at a list of sources, and that's what CARE is about. Next slide. Why CARE? Why do we have a CARE program? So we created this program about 5 years ago in response to community requests for help. Communities were saying, we're sick and tired of people, you know, examining us, researching us, deciding what is best for us. We want to do this ourselves. So we said, okay, we'll create a community-based, community-driven program for you, but we have to have parameters that we set up that you have to adhere to. And any grant program has that. Any grant program has those parameters. Any grant program has evaluation criteria. So it's a way, we say CARE is a way to address the concerns that goes beyond national regulation, those concerns that may not fit into the box, which in communities, you know you have those concerns. We also felt it was a way, and I'm not going to read it word for word, but I'm going to summarize what the slide says for those of you who not downloaded it. I hope you will go back and download it. And also a way for you to look at all the different resources out there that can help you with your problem. It's also a way for you to develop community consensus around any problem that you have and create solutions to address those. Next slide, please. The next slide is called Funding CARE Communities, and what does that mean? So this is a nationally competitive cooperative agreement. Cooperative agreement means that we work very closely with you as EPA. You can get up to $100,000 for a CARE Level 1. We put the average amount there for you to see what most communities are asking for on a CARE Level 1 is $90,000. For a CARE Level 2, you can get up to $300,000, but on average, it's $275,000. Next slide. This goes into what our CARE goals are, and you'll hear these goals throughout this conversation. You'll also, whenever you read the RFP, the goals will come out at you as well. And we want you to understand these goals, because as you write your proposal, you have to keep these goals in mind, right? So what do you want to do? You want to reduce your community exposures to all those environmental pollutants, but you want to do it in a collaborative way. And that's where the partnership comes into play. So what else do you want to do? You want to gain an understanding of what those different sources, those multiple sources of exposure are. That's why CARE, we call CARE, it's multimedia. It's a variety of sources out there that are affecting your community. So not one source is affecting your community. We want you to know what those sources are. The other thing it does, it helps you set priorities. You look at these risks across your place-based area, and you decide as a community which of those risks you want to address first. You have to articulate that. You have to tell us how you're going to do that. And the main thing, the absolutely main thing, is that we want you to be self-sustaining. We want you to continue on after the EPA funding has gone away. The next slide, please, begins with our care strategies for lives. Again, I have to tell you, all of this is in your RFP. So this is nothing new. But this talk tells you what our strategies, how we feel we can get to the care mission or vision or the guts of care. We want you to build effective collaborative partnerships. We want to be able to provide information, tools, and technical assistance to you. And we also want your partners to be able to do that. So it's not just us. You do that for your partnerships, too. We want you to be able to build consensus in communities for effective action on reducing risk. We want you to focus on action. What do you need to do to start reducing those risks? We want to facilitate networking among our care communities. We do that all the time, but especially at our care national workshops. And we want you, again, to build long-term community capacity. Next slide, please. The next slide is a schematic that talks about how care works. And this just shows you in a picture how we work in the care program. First of all, we join together. Second of all, we identify problems and solutions. You have to do that to get a care level one. And again, as I remind you, the care level one is up to $100,000. Number three, implement solutions and reduce risk. And four, become self-sustaining. So that gives you a care level two, and that's up to $300,000. Of course, we want you to think about self-sustaining throughout the whole entire effort. Next slide, please. New this year, this is all over the care RFP. It is really new this year, and we had to do this due to the appropriation law concerns. And, you know, as you know, I'm sure you're watching the news. The government does not have a budget. And because the appropriation law that we had a draft in place for the CARE program, which was the implementation authority, because that has not gone through, this year we can only award CARE Level 2 cooperative agreements to applicants that have already received the CARE Level 1. A lot of your questions on other calls was, does that mean we're not going to have a CARE Level 1? No. That does not mean that. There will still be care level ones. There will be care level twos. We fund the best projects. So it's a competitive program. So feel free, care level ones, to apply, because we want to see you too. But if you want to have a care level two, you cannot have it this year unless you've already received a care level one. Next slide, please. So we're telling you as a community that we want you to create change across your neighborhood. We're telling you that. We're telling you to build partnerships. We're telling you to collaborate across your neighborhood. Well, we have to do the same thing at EPA, and that's what this slide shows you, that we're doing that. We have built on current and past community-based programs that have been throughout EPA. We have developed a strong headquarters regional partnership for implementation of the CARE program. We are trying to work across the agencies so there's no strictly a waste issue, or strictly a water issue, or strictly an air issue. We are an EPA-wide issue, and that's why it's multimedia, multi-environmental solutions. And we are encouraging this two-way communication between EPA and our communities. And we're looking at things from a cumulative risk approach. We're doing that because you told us that in your communities, it's not just one issue, it's a multiple array of issues. In fact, a lot of them are cumulative issues. So we're trying to do that as well. Next slide, please. This tells you a little bit about our CARE grant funding and where we've been in the last 5 to 6 years and where our funding has been and the grants we were able to award with this funding. And we've done pretty well with a little bit of money. Right now, we've so far since 2005, we've awarded 91 grants in 78 communities for a total of $14 million. What's important to note is that we've actually loved you as care communities, those of you who are care communities on the phone. The care communities have leveraged about the same amount of money. So it's for dollar from EPA funding. Next slide, please. So we always say care is more than money because we know you need the money. Of course, it's the money. But it's also you need that technical support. You need that from the regions or from your partners. You need that scientific expertise and assessment. You need that community planning skills to help you identify and reduce your risk. You need to know about all the EPA programs out there that can help you do this. You need those networking opportunities, and you need to learn from each other. Next slide, please. So this slide is different from the if you had downloaded your materials earlier, we put a new PowerPoint up, and this slide is a little different from the last webcast PowerPoint that was up there, because we added something that you were asking a lot of questions about, promising practices. What are some examples of good care communities? We actually have a promising practice document that we added, and it tells you about 14 care communities and the successes they've made. So we thought this might be of help to you. So we're always learning from you what you want to have some help with. We also put the care link up there that takes you right to the publications page that provides those for you. And these documents are very helpful for you. So just check them out and learn from them. Next slide, please. That's the care community slide. And that tells you where all the care communities are right now. We actually found an error on the slide, thanks to you. We haven't had a chance to fix it yet. Actually, we found two errors. And one of them is the community labeled Turkey Creek. That is actually in Biloxi, Mississippi, so it should be on the Gulf Coast. It should be situated on the Gulf Coast. And the other one was the Gary, Indiana community. That's not really in Indiana, so it needs to be moved over. So we think that whole middle slid a little bit, and that's why it got off, and so we're fixing that. But at least it gives you an idea of where we are. We are a national program. We're all across the nation. We're in Alaska. We're in Hawaii. We're in Puerto Rico. We're in the Virgin Islands. We're everywhere. And if you see a state up there that we're not there yet, it's because we haven't had the highly competitive grant proposal from your state yet, if you're one of those blank states. Next slide, please. So this slide is a little different as well because we add Dennis O'Connor's name on this. This is our care contact slide. So you have Gail and my name on here, but we didn't have Dennis's name on here. And Dennis O'Connor is the person you have to, while the RFP is on the street, you have to email Dennis directly to get, to ask your questions. Some of them were coming in to Gail and myself, and we just sent them over to Dennis because legally I cannot answer your questions while the care RFP is published. Because what happens is that I lead the care selection team, and I cannot give an unfair bias to anyone. So that's why we have Dennis doing that. So his name is there now, and if you don't have your PowerPoint, please just go up there and download it from the link, and you'll see his email there as well. And that's all I have right now, and we can go directly to questions.
Okay, excellent. This is a reminder for those of you on the phone lines, we have globally muted everyone. So if you'd like to make a comment or ask a question, you'll need to hit #6 so that you can locally unmute your phone line and ask the question. Those of you who are streaming audio and are listening through your computer speakers, you'll need to be sure to use the question mark button that appears on the top of your slides to have a new window open up so you can type up your comment or question. I've got a number of those that have already come in online, and you can continue to keep typing them up, and we'll spend the rest of the scheduled time today going through your questions. So what I'm going to do is start with those of you on the phone lines. So if you are on the phone lines and you have a question or would like to make a comment, again, hit #6. We ask that you identify yourself and your organization, and then feel free to ask your question or make your comment. Okay, if we have some shy people on the phone lines, I'm going to read off a question that came in online that's coming in from the Genesee County Soil and Water Conservation District in Batavia, New York. And they ask our Soil and Water Conservation District eligible entities to apply for CARE Level 1 financial assistance.
Yeah, I'm assuming by the address from Elizabeth that this is a county office. And so county governments can apply for CARE, just as well as local or city governments can. So they're eligible. This is a county government office.
Okay. Excellent. The next question that came in online came in from the Iowa Environmental Council in Des Moines, Iowa. And they state, I understand that a level one proposal should address environmental concerns comprehensively. Our organization wants to apply for a community that has a history of regulatory actions and citizen concerns over air quality. Other regulatory actions have occurred, for example, contaminated site cleanup, combined sewers, among others. How successful will a proposal be if it highlights air over the other concerns in drinking water, stormwater, waste disposal, and hazardous waste sites?
Okay, well, first of all, we understand that you weren't born yesterday and that you have work that you're doing out here already. But for to get a CARE grant, you have to look across all those different issues and concerns. You cannot just come in with an air quality proposal or an air quality and contaminant waste proposal. You have to come in with a proposal that shows how you're going to look at all the things that are affecting your community, not just environmental concerns, but at least the environmental concerns of the four media, a large media of air, water, waste, and pesticides. But we don't want to just see environmental concerns. We want to see how you're looking across your neighborhood or place-based area for to find out what your ills are, what your problems are. So some of those concerns can be socioeconomic concerns as well. So we want a robust, comprehensive look. Think of it as a planning grant, maybe for some of you who may be in academia. Think of it that way, but it has to be a complete assessment, community assessment, not, you know, a rigorous risk assessment, a complete community assessment across your neighborhood.
I think that just to add to that, because it's hard to tell exactly based on how the question is written, I think it's fine if it's a community that seems to historically have had primarily air issues as long as effort is going to be made to take the comprehensive look. So if that's in the proposal, I think that's fine as long as the proposal of how you're going to move forward is to take the comprehensive look.
You're absolutely right, Michelle. And Michelle is actually on our eligibility review team, so she'll be reviewing your proposal as well.
Okay, great. I'm just going to switch back quickly to see if anybody on the phone lines has a question. Remember, we did globally mute everyone's line. So if you're on the phones, you'll need to hit #6 to take yourself off of mute and speak.
Yeah, this is Mary, Maureen McIlrath. And what I was wondering is where do you get the data from that shows the comprehensive analysis of your community?
Well, first of all, what you're doing is developing a plan to do that. And we have, so you don't have to have the data that shows that. So you have to articulate how you're going to do it. And so we have an example on our, we have a couple of examples on our CARE website on our publications page, which the link is in the PowerPoint. And one of them is the roadmap, which is a 10-step method for communities to assess and prioritize local risk. The other one is called PACE-EH, P-A-C-E, hyphen EH, and it's a protocol for assessing community health. And that is not, that is, if you go on that, that website, the publications page, it's below the pictures, it's the second link down, and you can link on that and find a whole, it'll take you to the Centers for Disease Control webpage, and it'll show you a lot of information on how to do that type of, assessment. But the most simple one, I think, is the roadmap. And I'm not sure who you work for, but we find that the PACE-EH seems to work better for local public health people who are working in the public health field. And then the roadmap seems to work best for others who are not in that field. So.
Thank you.
Uh-huh.
Okay, great. Again, if anybody on the phone line has a comment or question, you'll want to unmute your line by hitting #6, identify yourself, and ask your question or make your comment.
This is Janelle St. Pierre, and I'm with the Watershed Council.
I can't hear you. I'm sorry.
Janelle St. Pierre, and with the Watershed Council in Oregon. And we were wondering, because we're just starting a conversation with the community, how important is it to have letters of support for a Level 1 application?
Well, the levels of support, I mean, they're not required, first of all. But the levels of support show us, so because they're not required, you would get past the eligibility phase, okay? You would be eligible if you meet all the other criteria for eligibility. But when you get into the region, the level of support come into play. If the region needs to know that you are really connected in that community, and those levels of support help them see that. And that connection, of course, we do emphasize the fact that you have to be connected with the community resident. So that level of support shows the region that you have those connections.
So it could strengthen a proposal, but they are not required.
It's not required, but CARE is a very competitive program, and it will make your proposal stronger when you're evaluated.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, excellent. Let's try to take one more comment or question from the phones, and I'll switch back to our online questions. So, again, if you're on the phone line, hit #6, identify yourself, and feel free to ask your question.
Hi, this is Heather Heather Denny in Los Angeles, and I had a question about the Level 2 projects. Understanding that the, you know, priorities have to be identified by the community through the Level 1 participation, but in terms of the areas of focus, like the reduction of prioritized risk, are there particular kind of areas of risk that EPA is interested or limited to supporting through Level 2, like types of exposure or environmental areas of environmental exposure? Or?
Yeah, Heather, I remember you sent me an email, and I sent it over to Dennis, and I think he replied. So just to further restate what Dennis had told you is, well, first of all, I know you're looking ahead because right now you cannot apply for Level 2 if you've never been a Level 1, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's clear with
mm-hmm.
you, correct? Okay. And so, yes. So I'm assuming you're looking ahead. And so if you're looking ahead, that what happens with a Level 1 identification process and prioritization process is that whatever rises to the top of that planning process, if your community partnership decides that a particular environmental issue is the most important concern for them to address, then you would address that in the Level 2. And EPA does not choose and pick what those are. I mean, the community does that.
Sure. Yeah, I understand that. But, I mean, I guess our question or our thinking also is that potentially a community coalition could come together and identify any number. I mean, there's a whole wide range of problems that are, environmental in terms of, toxins, but also, maybe just broad kind of environmental, built environment kind of problems as well that
right.
Might be. And so I'm just wondering,
it
kind of depends where the coalition goes, but potentially could the coalition go in a direction that doesn't fit the priorities of EPA for Level 2, or is it just that the community did an appropriate process for Level 1, regardless of their priority would make them?
Okay, so I hear where you're coming from, and I think one of your concerns was related to food, I believe, if I remember correctly. And so, so I hear where you're coming from, and that's where the partnership comes into play, like the partners you have. As long as EPA, as long as you can tie it to an environmental concern, EPA will be okay with it. However, we are looking at the broader partnership to help out as well. Say, for example, that may be one of your priority concerns, and you may have three, right? This example,
mm-hmm.
you may have climate change as one, you may have the food issue as another, and you may have stormwater runoff as another. So you can have all of those in your Level 2, But but you'll work with your region, you know. And if EPA cannot address one of those, you'll work with a partner to address that. We're not going to cut it off. We're going to help you address that. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. And you mean not.
And just so you know, food has been, because I think I remember it was something related to food. Food has been an oncoming issue, an emerging issue with care communities. And so at the workshop 2 years ago in New York, we actually had a whole training session on food safety and food access. And we had some of our communities talking about, these are rural communities in the state of New York, you know, because supermarkets had left, and they were talking about, so it's an emerging issue for the care program.
Okay, thank you.
Okay,
great. I'm going to take a switch back over to the online questions that have been submitted, and we'll keep alternating between phones and electronic questions. If you have locally unmuted your line, I'd ask that you hit *6 to remute yourself or use your own mute button until we switch back over to the phone lines. Okay, so the next question that's coming in for online is coming from Strategic Communication Solutions in Novi. I believe this is in Michigan. They ask, can you be awarded both care level 1 and level 2 at the same time? Is it possible to receive both in the same year?
No. And it tells you so in the eligibility, in the RFP. But no, you cannot. You apply for level 1 or you apply for level 2. And we look at the progress you're making and the process you've articulated that you're going to do the level 1 in. And that process is a pretty long process. And we had someone at one point attempt to apply for a level 2 after they've only done a level, they wanted to close out the level 1 in one year. And they applied for the level 2, but they were not, we deemed them ineligible because we felt they had not completed the process of a level 1. So I would not recommend that. I mean, you can do it, but it might be a waste of your time because, I mean, if you think that you completed all the level 1 in 1 year, you can apply for a level 2, but you're going to be under extra scrutiny to see if you really did that work. And if we feel at ZPA you have not done it, we will make you ineligible for the level 2.
Okay. There's also a more general question coming in from the same location asking, how does a community become eligible?
That's a very broad question. It's kind of hard to understand how to approach it, but someone needs to meet the eligibility criteria to be funded. So I would suggest that this questioner look to who are eligible entities.
That's a start. A nonprofit, you know, tribal, local government.
And then see that the goals for what the community is looking to do meet the same goals of the care program. And then go from there if those match up.
Okay. The next question is coming in from the Oregon Sea Grant Extension in Tillamook, Oregon, and they ask, are there any restrictions on budget categories such as administrative overhead?
There are not restrictions on that, but just to let you know, it is a very competitive program, and if you are fortunate enough to get to the selection panel, we are going to look at that budget very carefully. And one of the selection panels, and it's all in the RFP too, one of our criteria is looking at the direct benefit to the community. And if we feel you have a really crazy overhead rate, 70% or whatever, and we're gonna question what's the benefit to the community in that. And so you need to be reasonable, and you need to understand that we're looking at this as a community-driven, community-based program, and we want to see the direct benefit to the community, not to a certain applicant.
Okay. The next question is coming in from the Mid-Ohio Regional Planning Commission in Columbus, Ohio. They ask, I would like to know if CARE grant funding can be used to complement another project that also receives HUD federal funding. It would greatly complement those efforts.
Absolutely. And we encourage that. That's part of your sustainability. We're very proud and we highlight the success of our care communities who have also gone on to get HUD grants or DOE grants or any of that, and it can go the other way. We were very fortunate in the very early years when we got a lot of local public health applicants who came in and had already had Centers for Disease Control grants. And so we encourage that. We encourage that one government aspect.
Okay. The next question is coming in from the Environmental Law Clinic at Vermont Law School, and this is in South Royalton, Vermont. They ask, does EPA prefer to fund proposals relating to a single community, or would a proposal for a program that addresses multiple communities have a good chance of being funded?
We have awarded grants for multiple communities, but the secret here is that it has to be local. And so the communities have to be beside each other and relative distance to each other, and they have to be able to develop a partnership that can work in both communities, you know. So we're open to pushing that envelope, but the secret is that it has to be a local community partnership, you know, and you have to work very closely to show up that those communities are coming together to work on some issues. Because we know environmental concerns, the air issues don't just stay in one community. We know they overlap to another community. We also know on the water, on watershed communities, we know that could affect more than one community. So we're open to that.
Excellent. The next question is coming in from Bayamon, and my apologies if I mispronounced that, Central University in Bayamon, Puerto Rico. They state that they're coming from the Bayamon Central University, and they're planning to submit for the first time. How would they do this?
Well, I can only suggest that you read the RFP very, very carefully. You are eligible because you are a university. You have to make sure that you build that partnership the way we want it built. It's a collaborative partnership. You have to have community residents involvement. You have to have local government. And we want you to start thinking about involving that local business or have a plan to do it if you don't have it already. And then look at our evaluation criteria and address those.
Read the question and answer document. And if you're going to use grants.gov to submit your application, be sure to register for the ID or the PIN that you need well before the due date, because it takes a little time to get that back.
And even if you want to use grants.gov, you can send a hard copy in. It has to be hand-delivered, so we're talking about UPS or Federal Express. And you send that in to Catrice Jefferson, who's in the room here, and her address is all in the RFP. Good luck.
Everything you need is there.
Excellent. I'll take another question online, and then we'll switch over to the phone lines. This next question is coming in from the ADLM Environmental Public Health in Moravia, Iowa, and they say that based on slide number 11, would it still benefit them to apply for level 1 due to the lack of present funding?
We have funding this year. So we want level 1 to apply. I maybe you're confused because I'm assuming, maybe that's wrong to assume, maybe you're questioning this because I said that you cannot apply for a care level 2 unless you have a care level 1. But care level 1s are encouraged to apply. We have some dynamite care level 1s, and we don't, as long as they can compete, we want them.
Okay, great. Let's go ahead and switch back to the phone lines. Again, if you are on the phones and you'd like to make a comment or ask a question, you need to unmute your own phone line. You want to be sure that you hit #6 to unmute your line, identify yourself, and then ask your question. Okay. I don't hear anybody on the phone lines, but don't worry, we'll come back to you. I'm going to switch back to the electronic questions, and if you are streaming audio, you can continue to type those comments up as we speak. We'll continue to answer questions for as long as we have a lot of time. So this next question is coming in from the Framingham Public Health, and this is again in Framingham, Massachusetts. They ask, or they state that, I am interested in knowing what the proposal readers will be looking for in terms of priorities for community decision-making. I applied for a state EPA proposal that stressed community empowerment, making decisions on what was important to them. The proposal was rejected. The comments back from the readers were simply that we were not awarded the grant because we did not provide specific deliverables of what the community would do. Apparently, there was some disconnect in terms of what the readers were expecting and our need to respect the community decision-making process.
Well, that is a different grant program. So, unfortunately, we can't provide any additional clarity there, but we think we're pretty clear on what we're looking for, and this is to absolutely put the decision-making in the hand of the community members with the full breadth of information that EPA and other partners can bring to the table.
Yeah, and so you have to look at that evaluation criteria in your RFP and adhere to that. I mean, that's what we're going to, score you on.
Yeah.
And it's pretty explicit what we're going to score you on.
We put it all there in the RFP. And that's what we stick to. So.
Yeah.
Okay. The next question comes in from Lee County in Fort Myers, Florida. They state that you mentioned PACE EH as a good model for local public health agencies. What would be a good model for a nonprofit slash civic association?
Well, you can still use PACE EH. It's a logical model. But we also have the roadmap, which is actually on our website as well. That's a good model as well. And these are only examples. We only put those up there because we kept being asked for examples. You can call it the Karen roadmap. We don't care. As long as you give us a logical step-by-step on how you're going to build your partnership, how you're going to identify the multiple environmental risks and social economic risks across your neighborhood, how you're going to reach consensus in the partnership to address those risks, and how you're going to prioritize those risks for action.
Okay. The next question is a pretty simple one, but it's clarifying a previous one that was submitted. This is also coming in from Strategic Communication Solutions in Michigan. They're asking for more help in identifying where the eligibility requirements can be found.
So you click on your CARE RFP, please, and on page 3 it has content by section. And one of the sections is called eligibility information, and it starts on page 18. And the first two paragraphs tell you what your eligibility requirements are.
And when we're all done today, everyone will be referred to a links page where you'll be able to find links over to the CARE website as well as a number of the documents that have been referenced today, including the RFP. Okay, the next question is coming in from Heartland in San Diego, California, and they state, our organization is focused on low to mid-income neighborhoods. We submitted a foundation grant to help bring awareness regarding in-home toxic issues as well as construction work. Part of that grant's component was to build community awareness and public participation in policy meetings and planning. With CARE, it seems like a wonderful continuation regarding the toxic component. Some of our partners are involved with the monitoring through UL regarding in-home CO2. Through the CARE grant, we would like to help with data collection and monitoring as well as building our community participation. My main question is, can we use CARE funds to help build overall community participation and support under Level 1, as well as use some of the funds to offset monitoring costs for data collection of in-home toxic levels and testing? Sorry if this sounds convoluted. It's hard to listen and think of what I will type to you at the same time.
Yeah, that's okay. It doesn't sound convoluted. Well, the first question is, of course you can use CARE funds to help build overall community participation and support. Of course you can. Now, you want to, the second question is a little hard because you want to start using CARE Level 1 funds to offset monitoring costs of data collection of in-home toxic levels. You haven't shown me yet, and you got to show me in the CARE Level 1 that in-home toxic levels, that in-home work is the most important work your community wants to do. And CARE tells you that you've got to go through a process to decide what that community wants to do. You cannot just say what it wants to do. You have to articulate a process where you're going to look at all your risks, you're going to talk about it, educate the community, and you're going to come up with the fact that that's one of the risks. Now, if you do all that within the 2-year period, you do all that and you decide you want to start looking at, and it comes up that in-home toxic stuff is the most important thing you want to address, then you could probably start doing some implementation in the care level one. And that would be okay as long as you did all the rest of the stuff first. But you get to monitoring, and that's the kicker. We don't really, monitoring is kind of expensive. And we're going to, if you're fortunate enough to be awarded the grant, your region is going to look very closely at those monitoring costs. Because we're not a monitoring grant. You know, and they may try to work with you to find other funds to do that, and not in the care program.
And again, just in case it's more than a language thing here, but you may have to expand your thinking beyond participation and support if that's really what you mean. This is a community-driven process, so that might just be some language that to carry over from something.
Absolutely. Thanks for putting that out, Michelle, because it is community-based, community-driven, so it's not community participation. The community has to help lead this process. And if we don't see that articulated in your proposal, that they're going to be right there in the front helping lead this, and it's not being led by another one entity, it's going to be led by the partnership, then you will probably not score very high.
So if that's not what you're looking for, then CARE might not be
the right
program to complement what you've done with the foundation.
Yeah.
Okay. The next question is coming in from Atlantic Energy and Engineering in Georgia. They ask, can an institution be eligible for CARE if they collaborate with their community?
Only if they do.
Yeah, but is it a non-profit institution? See, I'm confused. A for-profit is not eligible. A non-profit is, and you have to collaborate with the community. If you don't show us that you're doing that, you're not eligible.
Okay, and if the individual from Atlantic Energy and Engineering has any clarification they'd like to make to the question, by all means, go ahead and type up another comment, and we'll get that in. The next question is going to come in from U.S. Department of Interior, and this is in Cathedral City, California. They ask, can a nonprofit associated with a public high school apply for CARE Level 1? In parentheses, thinking that the students with community, agency, and science mentors could work on this with students.
Education institutions can apply. They're considered nonprofits. They can apply. The problem comes is that what are you designating your community? If the community cannot be centered around the high school, the community has to be across the whole neighborhood. And so we come into eligibility decisions when it's just centered around the high school. It can't do it. That would be ineligible. If that high school is going to spearhead a process for the neighborhood it's in, and it includes everyone who lives, works, plays, and works in that neighborhood besides the high school students and their parents, then yes, it would be fine.
Okay. The next question is coming in from the American Lung Association, the Plains Gulf region in Dallas, Texas. They ask that the American Lung Association is composed of multiple chapters. If another chapter has been awarded a Level 1 grant, is a different chapter of the American Lung Association eligible for Level 2 funding?
No, it's for the same community. You have to have gone through the Level 1 process with that community and are proposing to do the Level 2 process.
And usually we're looking at were you a partner in that community. Because sometimes it's not the same applicant, but it has to be a partner who's been involved in a Level 1.
Okay.
For that same community.
Mm-hmm. All right. The next question is a little bit of a longer one, and I'm going to do my best to read this out loud. This is coming in from the Department of Natural Resources and in the Environment in Newcastle, Delaware. And they state, the Delaware project involves collaborative partnership between the contiguous southern Wilmington and northern Newcastle County neighborhoods. All are affected by the same air, water, hazardous, and solid waste pollution sources. Wilmington has existing unenforced zoning regs that go beyond federal and state regs. Newcastle County neighborhoods have no zoning regulations. So the proposed project would build partnerships between communities, understand pollution and impacts on population, and then build consensus on city and county zoning regs and enforcement strategies to reduce exposure to pollutants. Also, build consensus on resources and strategies to implement recommendations of previous Department of Natural Resources, such as drainage and air, and regional air quality organization like traffic studies, and then also identify community-based strategies like landscaping and transportation. And they're wondering if that project is too broad for CARE.
Yes. I'm saying yes. The writer does not realize this, but I actually live in Wilmington, Delaware. And I know that I know the area he's talking about. And so you cannot do those northern Newcastle County neighborhoods and southern Wilmington. That is too large. I mean, you can do a section of Wilmington. You can do northern Newcastle, you know, or you can do southern Wilmington. But you cannot do all of Wilmington. That would be too large. There's too many different contingencies there. And so your project sounds like it could be a workable project. But I would suggest, to be competitive, that you make it a little smaller in scope.
Okay. The next question is also coming in from the American Lung Association in Dallas, Texas, and they ask you to help with defining community. They are considering a zip code with multiple elementary schools as their target community. Would selecting three or more schools and a neighborhood within a certain zip code be too broad for a community target? Would one school and a neighborhood be too small?
The answer to both those questions is no. You can have three or more neighborhoods within a zip code and three or more schools in a neighborhood within a zip code, that would not be too broad. You could have one school in a neighborhood in a zip code, and that won't be too small. The secret is, you know, what kind of community partnership are you building? You know, is it going to be robust? Is it going to be inclusive? You know, what are you trying to do? Are you going to identify the risk? Are you going to have everybody included in that? Is it going to be community-driven? You know, so, you know, you have to articulate that process.
Okay. The next question is coming in from the Latin American Community Center in Wilmington, Delaware. And they state that this is our first year applying, and we were wondering if the funding is for a period of 2 years or 1 year. For example, the average is $90,000 for level one. But would that be for each year or 2 years combined?
It's a two-year grant, and I'm sorry I didn't say that during the presentation. It is a two-year grant, and so you could access that money over 2 years. We have had some grants actually completed in less than 2 years, but like maybe 18 months or something like that, and then we had some grants who've gone 2.5 years. So it depends upon once you get into the work, you'll see if you need a little bit less time or a little bit more time. So it is at least a two-year grant program.
Okay.
The total amount is the $90K. It's not 90 each year.
Oh, yes.
Overall total is $90K.
Yeah. You cannot get more than $100,000 for a level one, period. So you can't get 90 in 1 year and 90 in another, or 100 in 1 year and 100 in another. It's period, $100,000.
Okay, great. We'll switch back over to our telephone participants. So if you're on the phone and you have a question or comment.
Jane?
Yep.
Jane, can I interrupt?
By all means.
Is Margaret on the phone? I think Margaret was having trouble trying to get on.
Yes, I'm on the phone.
Okay. I'm happy to hear you made it. Thanks, Margaret.
Okay. Well, with that, then again, we'll go back to the phone lines. If you're on the phones and you have a question or comment, you'll want to be sure to hit #6, identify yourself, and then simply ask your question.
This is Janelle St. Pierre again at Warren, Oregon. And
sure.
We have legacy contaminants from industrial use. And one of the things, they're currently being studied by our Department of Environmental Quality, but it's not data that's particularly accessible to the public. And one of the things we wanted to know is you know, kind of processing that data and making it available and bringing it to the community so that folks can understand, is that, as part of a CARE grant, is that a good use of CARE grant funds?
So you're going to do that in addition to everything that else, everything else that's required in a CARE level one.
Yeah, I just wanted to know in that particular aspect, we want to be able to, so that's part of it. The legacy toxins is part of it, and part of it's sort of the community economics and water quality, and we don't really have air quality issues so much. But we want to know, is that an eligible, you know, is that something that makes sense?
Yeah, it's part of your proposal as an education piece to your community, to the partnership and the community at large. But I must caution you to, even though you think you don't have air issues, you may have indoor air issues. So we're going to look at to make sure that you have, you're planning to look at the air concerns, not just to take your word for it because you have legacy pollutant problems.
So we're a small nonprofit, I mean, and we're trying to approach, you know, one fairly, a couple of things that we're more familiar with, but we don't necessarily know, all of the potential concerns that might be in the area. Is it sufficient to say, here's the approach we would take to try to determine those concerns?
Yes, exactly. And you cannot, and I would advise you not to lean heavily on what you already know, because this is something that we want to see you looking broader.
Okay.
To look across your neighborhood broader, to say, you can, and we, like we said earlier, we know you weren't born yesterday. We know you have problems. We know there's issues out there. So you can tell us about those issues, but also tell us how you're going to look broader to see what else is out there in your neighborhood.
Okay. And this is Margaret from Region 5, and I would just add, you want to collect existing environmental health data. So your organization is going to be forming a partnership which includes all kinds of stakeholders in your community and EPA. You personally, as an organization, don't have to have all the data and all the knowledge of the data. You just have to have a process for collecting all the existing data on multiple pollutant and environmental health sources.
Okay.
So you want to have a proposal that says that you're going to look at, we call it cumulative environmental health concerns, so basically, you know, everything to do with air, water, waste, toxics, pesticides, etc. But you personally don't have to have access to all the data. You just have to show that you have a process whereby all of your partners, including EPA, are going to collect existing data for you.
Okay, excellent. If someone else on the phone lines has a question or would like to make a comment, go ahead and hit #6, identify yourself, and make your comment. Okay, I'll switch back then to the electronic questions and comments that are coming in, and again, we'll keep alternating. So this next question is coming in from Southern Echo in Jackson, Mississippi. And they ask, are CARE Level 1s being allowed to compete for Level 1 again?
Okay, so under Section 3, the eligibility information section that I was talking to you about before, we have a list of things that make you ineligible. And one of the things that make you ineligible is you try to apply for CARE Level 1 again. You cannot do that. A CARE Level 1 cannot apply, cannot apply for CARE Level 1 again. A CARE Level 1 who's been awarded a CARE grant cannot apply for CARE Level 1 again. If you applied and didn't get it, of course you can apply again. But if you already got an award for a CARE Level 1, you cannot apply for CARE Level 1 again. Does everybody understand that? You can't do it? I said it 3 times. Okay. And please look at your RFP, what you can and cannot do. And that's under Section 3, beginning on page 18, in eligibility information. And that particular, what I was reading from, is under C, threshold eligibility requirements. And there's about 10 of them there that you need to pay attention to.
Okay. Again, let's go back to the electronic questions that have come in online. And this next one's coming in from Heartland, San Diego. And this is a budget question. They ask, is, quote, community involvement training conference the same as, quote, national training workshop? And they also indicated that they couldn't open the website, the pace.naccho.org download page that's referenced on page 9 of the RFP.
First, no, they are different conferences. The National Training Workshop is, I think the Community Involvement Training Conference has a broader audience and a wider invitation. So the National Training Workshop is where we bring together all of our current and our former grantees are invited. I'll come back always as well. Once in the CARE family, always part of the CARE family. And it is a lot of peer-to-peer learning of CARE grantees and other speakers brought together, but it is specially planned for the CARE grantee family.
And we're sorry that link did not work. Thanks for letting us know. We will definitely check that after this call, and we will go on and make sure that link is working for KCH.
Hopefully you could get to that from the
CARE
website or
no, she said she went to the CARE website.
Oh, I thought it should be
already. So this is Margaret, and I would just add if the CARE website's down, you can go to epa.gov/communityhealth, and the PACH document is on the front page.
Ah, right.
Oh, yeah,
and it's
right.
A great new web page.
Okay. And also you can just Google PACH. I think it'll come up that way, too. So we're sorry that that happened, and we apologize, and we'll try to fix that.
Okay, thanks. The next question is clarifying an earlier one about neighborhoods in Delaware that might be eligible for a CARE grant. Again, this is coming in from Newcastle, Delaware, and they state that the Wilmington neighborhood is Southbridge, and we are talking about Wilmington and the Newcastle County neighborhoods along Newcastle Avenue near the Port of Wilmington. Is that sufficiently narrow?
Well, the only reason why you're asking me these questions is because I'm from Wilmington. I really can't get into that too much, but you need to articulate that you're going to have a local partnership.
And how you're going to be able to manage the process that you propose, given the size of the community. And
so, Southbridge is a neighborhood. You can have more than one neighborhood in Wilmington. Southbridge is in Newcastle County, so
you really can't comment on.
But you can have more than more than one neighborhood. We have seen that in our grant.
Okay. The next question is actually coming in from San Diego, California, and they're asking if there are other webinars that were archived or coming up that they should or could review. And I can say that there were two previous deliveries of this very same webinar. So it's the same presentation, same documents were referenced, and it was the same type of interaction. So you may benefit from listening to some of the other questions if you'd like to. Those were also archived on the CLUIN training page. I'll give directions when we're done today with how you can access those. But from the CARE program, are there other resources that you want to be sure to highlight your potential applicants to take a look at?
I just think they should definitely look at the Q&A question and answer document that's on the web. I mean, a lot of your questions are going to be answered there. And please, I cannot emphasize this enough, read the CARE RFP. It's long, it is, but we gave a lot of examples and definitions in it that will help you.
Okay. The next question is coming in from the Iowa Environmental Council in Des Moines, Iowa, and they state that the grant can't be used to develop and distribute a survey to 10 or more community members. Please put this in the larger context of discussions, priority setting, and interactions that are part of the scope of CARE.
The survey we're talking about is a written survey, and that's what we call an OMB directive. Office of Management Budget, that's a government-wide directive. That's why you cannot do a survey of 10 people. Priority setting, discussions, interactions, they're in person. They're focus groups, they're meetings, they're conferences. That's in person. That's different from a written survey.
And
I would ask Michelle add something. I would ask Margaret to add something as well, because she's from the region.
And I was just going to add that as part of your project, you can implement a survey if you have other funds or a partner who is able to do it. You just can't use federal funds. As Marva said, it's a federal requirement that we're held to, and because of our grant relationship with you all as our grantees, you're held to it as well. So if you're able to use other dollars or if you're able to use partner organizations to help with this, then you can go ahead and do the survey as part of your project.
Okay. Let's switch back and see if we have any phone line comments or questions. If you're on the phone lines, please hit #6, identify yourself, and feel free to ask your question. Okay. I will continue on with the electronic questions. This next one is coming in from the Coalition for the Upper South Platte, and that's in Lake George, Colorado. They say, In the project description, the RFP indicates that we need to describe the extent of environmental and public health problems affecting the community. Currently, our community does not have significant environmental or public health problems, but we are experiencing a boom in natural gas exploration, and we are interested in applying for a CARE grant to establish background conditions related to air and water quality. Additionally, we'd be interested in determining how the natural gas drilling may impact the environment and public health, as this question relates to the monitoring question earlier.
So, you know, I'm sorry, but CARE may not be for you, because we do have a requirement for the community partnership to look across all the environmental pollutants and social economic concerns. So, you know, if you come in and just talk about two areas, you know, you would be deemed ineligible. So the CARE grant may not be for you if you already have set in mind what you want to do.
Okay. The next question is coming in from, again, the Latin American Community Center in Wilmington, Delaware, and they have two questions. The first one is the CARE National Training Workshop mandatory? And then, is each of the CARE grantees mandatory to assist it?
Yeah, it is mandatory. It's a requirement that's written in the RFP that you have to budget for. You have to attend. It's your training workshop, and it's where you learn how to become a better CARE grantee. And so it is mandatory. And in every current CARE grantee has to be there. And we would like you to assist in the planning of the workshop session. You don't have to, but I think that once you are a CARE grantee, that we found that it helps people understand the program better. So they like to assist.
And many of our second-year grantees do become some of the instructors, many of the instructors at the workshop. And I don't think it's a requirement, but I think after they've gone and benefited from the first year and hearing from their peers, I think many of them, with encouragement and sometimes on their own, find it to be the right role to play.
Yeah, so what's not a requirement is that they assist in the workshop. What is a requirement is they're a current grantee that they attend.
Mm-hmm.
And Appendix C, the sample budget narrative, actually has it written in the sample that you have to budget for the National Training Workshop. And we checked that budget to make sure you did that. And if your CARE grant is for 2 years, which it usually is, you have to go each year.
Okay. So at this point, I don't have any more electronic questions that have been submitted. You can certainly, if you have something burning, by all means, go ahead and click that question mark button and type up a comment or question quickly. And while we're waiting to see if we have any more of those come in, I'll switch back over to the telephone line participants and see if anybody on the phone lines has another comment or question. Again, we have globally muted all lines, so you'll want to be sure to hit #6. And be sure that you're taken off of mute to identify yourself and then ask your question. Okay. I do have another question that came in online from San Diego, California. And this is in regards to cost sharing, and they're referencing page 19 in the RFP. They ask, should we list our leveraging in the budget? The wording in the RFP made me a little concerned about showing our in-kind leverage. Also, that they've listened to a past webinar of the same presentation, and I'm wondering what percentage of, quote, personnel payment would you accept as reasonable? They have a primary coordinator who will handle a lot of the community volunteer efforts in coordinating public, quote, buy-in and participation regarding increased awareness of toxic conditions within the community. We plan to distribute informational brochures as a level one grantee, and I'm hoping that this will be an allowable expense.
Okay, so let's take it step by step, question by question, Kimberly. And so, should you list your leveraging in the budget? So this is touchy because this was in the RFP based on our advice from OGC as well as our competition advocate, person who approved the RFP. And so it's a required paragraph in our RFP now. So I will just say what we've told people in the past is that if you're going to list it, you're going to be accountable for it. And so if you list it, you're going to be accountable for it, and the region is going to ask you, what are you doing about it, and where is it, and you're going to be asked a lot of questions about it. So it's up to you whether you want to list it or not. We're required to put this paragraph in our RFP. I can't make a recommendation to you, but just know that if you do list it, you're going to be accountable for it. I would take you to the first part of the sentence. It is not required as a condition of eligibility under this competition. You can use your own judgment on that. The other question about what percentage of personnel payment would you accept as reasonable? You have a primary coordinator who will handle a lot of community volunteer efforts and coordinating the public buy-in and participation regarding increased awareness of toxic conditions within the community. We know that a level one, a lot of the work is going to be done by that primary coordinator or that facilitator or that community organizer. So I can't give you an exact answer to your question about what percentage of personnel, but we recognize when we look at the budget that there's going to be some personnel costs there. So we recognize that. That's why we put it as we list it as an example on the sample budget, that these costs are for any employees that you hire to work on the grant, to manage the grant. So that's a valid and allowable and reasonable cost to you.
When we were, I don't know if this is a follow-up to the earlier question about overhead, but that's a different matter. Overhead would be different than personnel. And maybe
right.
This isn't a follow-up to that.
Yeah, overhead is different than personnel, yeah. Overhead is definitely different.
I'm not sure that's why they were.
No, overhead is different. Overhead is, you know what overhead is. Okay, and the last question, we plan to distribute informational brochures, and you're hoping that that is allowable. Yes, it is. It's part of your activities or tasks to do your work. And I will ask Margaret to jump in at any time if I'm getting anything wrong. Margaret Millard from Region 5 is my CARE grant co-lead in the region, and she is my regional co-lead on the selection panel as well.
You're right on track, Marva, as always.
Okay, great. The next question is coming in online from Mission Hill Health Movement in Boston, Massachusetts. And they ask, what do you mean by partnership? We know only one group that would be named the grantee, but so you have other requirements?
Well, our requirements is in the first slide I told you about what is CARE, community-based, community-driven. So, yes, we can only award the grant to one applicant, but that applicant has to show us that they're developing a community-based, community-driven, collaborative partnership. That includes people who live and work in that community, and that the project is driven by the partnership. You know, the activities is driven by the partnership. So you have to articulate the plan for that. You know, you can't tell me, this is not a Marvin King project. This is a Marvin King's community project. And so you have to make sure that you let us know
and in your proposal that this is not about you. This is about everybody that lives there.
Okay. The next question I have comes in from the Noli Jenkins Family Center in Lexington, Mississippi. And they state they are currently working on planning for a wealth creation planning grant, which will create employment opportunities for unemployed youth from 18 to 24 using waste materials like illegal dump sites, construction sites, et cetera, and remediation strategies. Can CARE funds be used to support this type of project, but look across the communities at broader issues as well, including aerial spraying, junkyards, impact on health from the runoff from the illegal dump sites?
I think I'm thinking of how our other instructor, Dennis, usually answers questions like these. We know that there are a lot of issues that folks have identified that are very important and that people have a strong passion about, and this seems like it could be a case where you know what you want to work on, you know it's an important issue, it's being presented here with, if we also do a little CARE on the side, could we get funded? CARE needs to be the main event when you're applying for a CARE grant. And especially if you're doing a level one, it's going to take a lot of effort to go through the level one process, I think, and the focus. And it sounds like that might not be possible if you're very focused on another project that you already have going on. It doesn't function very well as a side project to another issue that you're focused on. If you do want to take on CARE, as well, and you do see how that could be a benefit, then what you're presenting here as a possible focus area could rise to the top of the prioritization process and be a very viable focus area for a level two if you were then funded for a level two part of the process.
Yeah, and so to add, absolutely, Michelle, but to add to what Michelle is saying is that CARE looks at everything. You listed some things here that are related to waste, you know, the aerial spraying is, I guess, air. But it looks at everything. It doesn't look at just air, waste, water, pesticides. It looks at your social economic conditions as well. So it's a broader planning grant. We like the idea that you have youth involved. We are that's an emerging issue for CARE. But that's just one of the emerging issues. So you have to be a lot broader in your thinking about a CARE grant than what you have up there right now. I would suggest that CARE is looking a lot broader than what you're saying, and maybe that other planning grant is an addition, is a subset under CARE. But CARE is, as Michelle said, the main event. Because we want you to look at all the historical and issues, that all the environmental issues, all the social justice issues, all the social economic issues. We want you to look at everything, and we want you to include everyone who lives, works, and plays in that neighborhood to do it. You know, and so we don't want a project that you've already decided that's what you're going to do. We want a project that you're articulating a process where you're going to include everybody to figure out what needs to be done. And if you can't do that, anybody on the phone, if you can't do that, CARE is not for you.
Okay. Again, we don't have any more electronic questions or comments at this point, so let's switch back over to the phone lines. If you're on the phone, go ahead and hit #6, identify yourself, and ask your question. Okay, I don't see any more electronic comments or questions coming in at this point in time. So at this point, Marva, if you guys would like to make some closing comments.
Well, I just wanted to let you know that this is our third webcast, and I think we've talked to over 300 people. We want to wish you the best of luck for this. It's a very competitive process. We can't emphasize enough that you read the RFP. We can't emphasize enough that you read the question and answer document. We want you to be a success. We want to have you be one of our successes. And we wish you the best of luck for this. But please remember that we are a community-based, community-driven program. It's not about you, the applicant. It's about you, the community. And I would like to go to my regional co-lead for her comment.
I would just thank everyone for their interest in CARE and look at the frequently asked questions document as you're preparing your application. If there's a question that is not answered there, please email Dennis O'Connor. We do want to be responsive to all your questions. And thank you so much for your interest in CARE.
And I'm on the line now, so
thanks
much, folks. And I expect I'll get some questions from some of you.
And that was Dennis O'Connor, who's referenced on slide number 17 as the point of question, point of contact for any follow-up questions that you may have after today's session.
Well, Jean, I want to thank you, too. This is the first year we've used you as a facilitator, and you've done an excellent job.
Well,
and I'm sorry, Jean. We got you now. We're not going to let you go.
Oh, boy. Well, no, it has been my pleasure to be involved with these sessions. I want to thank everybody in the CARE program for putting together some really great, informative, and dynamic sessions and engaging with the public so very well to get direct questions brought in as well as giving them answers directly back. So if there are no more closing comments or questions, and I don't see anything else coming in electronically, I'm going to ask everybody if you could move along to slide number 18, which is the final slide in your package. On slide number 18, you'll find two links that are important relative to what we mentioned today. The first one is an additional resources or links page. If you're looking at the slides online, those are active hyperlinks, and you can click on them, and they'll actually open up the page. And there you'll find hyperlinks to the CARE website as well as the RFP and then also an option to download the question and answer document that was referenced throughout today's session. So many of the questions that you have asked or perhaps haven't even thought to ask have already been answered. And so we highly recommend you take a moment to go to that links page and download the CARE Q&A document if you can. The other link that you'll find on slide 18 is a link to our feedback form. It's a very short form. I do read each and every one of the responses. So if you found today's session informative and you'd like to see things like this continue in the future, we would ask you to take just a minute or two to fill out the form and let us know what you thought of the session. If you're looking to get credits or confirmation for your participation today, by filling out the feedback form, you'll actually have a box you can check, which is circled on slide 18, and you could have a confirmation email sent to you for your records that at least verifies that you submitted feedback once the session was over. We don't necessarily give out CEUs or PDHs here, but occasionally those accrediting institutions will accept a copy of the materials, a registration confirmation, and a confirmation of a feedback form to verify that you did participate. If you're not in front of the computer with Internet access, you simply have a hard copy of those materials. If you go back to the seminar homepage, all of the links that I mentioned are active. So at the bottom of the page, you'll find a link to the additional resources page as well as a link to our feedback form. And that stuff will remain active in perpetuity, so you can come back to it tomorrow or next week if you'd like to fill out that information. Again, the entire session was recorded and will be archived on the Clouin website. It usually takes us about 1 to 2 weeks to get those up. If you want, you can simply go to clouin.org/training, and there's a link to archive sessions. And you can go back right now and actually browse the over 350 sessions that we have available for free replay and download. You can also, if you like, subscribe to our free podcast in iTunes so that you can receive the latest archive as soon as it's available to be delivered directly to you in whatever format makes the most sense. So with that, those are the end of my closing reminders to everybody on the final slide. Again, I want to echo my thanks to the CARE program coordinators and all of our presenters who joined us through the sessions that we've hosted this year. And I also want to thank all the various members from the public who participated. I know we all have busy schedules, and I'm glad that you were able to fit in time for the session, and I hope that you found it to be a valuable expenditure of your time. This will be the formal conclusion of the third and final CARE national webinar. I want to thank you all again for joining us, and I hope to hear from you soon on a future Clouin Internet Seminar. Thank you and take care.